The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Welcome to a Monday. It's a brand new week. New day, same shit, huh? Except we had the opening of the confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to sit on the Supreme Court. And that's what we're going to talk a lot about today. Actually, we're going to talk about whatever you want to talk about today because there's no guests. It's just us. Actually, I was hoping that today was the day we might be able to talk to Tanya, our friend in Ukraine, who's no longer in Ukraine, but she needs a little more time to detox. And I say that, you know, I chose that word not so carefully. I mean, it just came into my mind, but it fits. Because here's the deal. When we last spoke on Friday, I shared with you the really good news that Tanya and her friend and her friend's son, Tanya's godson, Mark, had gotten out of Ukraine and they were in Poland. And the people were so welcoming. I mean, I shared with you her heartfelt gratitude for the amazing kindness of the Polish people. Over the weekend, and I think when we last left on Friday, I shared with you that her sister, who lives in Dubai, was trying to get them to go there. And then finally, she had had sent three tickets for Tanya's friend, whose name I still don't know, I should know, and the little boy, Mark, to join them in Dubai. Well, I can tell you that this morning, they are there. They arrived yesterday. Yesterday, actually, in the 20th, I guess, is when they flew. And they're safe and sound. In fact, I should, I've been showing you these videos. Let me show you this real quickly, if I can pull this up. Bear with me. Well, you know what? I'm just going to, you'll see my button board behind it. But there is the picture of Tanya and her friend and her sister and the little boy. It's a lot less crowded than where she was staying in Poland, for sure. What she had written to me was, here, let me just share this last exchange with you. She said, it's really sad. She, you know, they were in a room. There are too many of us here for one apartment. She wrote, we are seven people in one small room and another five people in the next room. And then she said, we were in the city center today. Everyone is in humanitarian aid, food, trucks, water, sweets, hot soup are distributed everywhere. It's wonderful. But when I see this, I cry. And what she was talking about was a sign on a store that was written in Polish. It said, Krakow is all with you. And in Ukrainian below it, it said, welcome. And so then the weekend came, right? And over the weekend, she sent me a few messages. I'm going to do this, and then we're going to launch into other stuff. She said, I asked how she was doing. She was supposed to leave for Dubai the next day. And I know she was conflicted because her husband has to stay in Ukraine. He's a man between the age of 18 and 60 and is not allowed to leave. And she said they'd never been apart more than 15 days in 10 years. Anyway, she wrote, I said, how are you feeling? How are you doing? What's happening there? She said, we continue to receive messages about the death of friends and different people. I don't understand how you can calm me down. Today at 2:50 p.m., my husband heard a rocket flying. And she said, but we're ready. Tomorrow morning, we are going to the airport. And they did. So yesterday, they flew to Dubai. She wrote to me from the airport. She said, hello, we're at the airport in Krakow. The flight was delayed. We're waiting for another hour. And then the next message I got from her was at 7:12 a.m. yesterday. And she said, I see. This was a continuation of that. She said, we are in Dubai. That's what it was. This was 3:44 yesterday. Sorry, the 7 was the conversation we were having when they were leaving for the airport and then at the airport. Then the photograph, the little video I just showed of them sitting in a room said, "We are in Dubai." And that was it. She said, so she went to sleep. Today, around noon, I got this message from her after I asked her how she was doing, or she's settling in. I said, "Are you feeling any better, a little more calm?" And she said, "I don't know if it's possible to say that I'm better. It's calm here. Now I can't believe that there is a war somewhere. The husband is normal, still sirens. I naturally, all thoughts with him. Today, my sister's friends came to visit to support us. They brought money, they brought shoes, and someone brought children's toys. We didn't sleep much, though. I couldn't fall asleep for a long time. We want to establish a sleep mode, but this is later." And then she said, "Well, let's try to fall asleep early today. I'm still sick. My throat hurts. Therefore, I will be treated and go to bed early." So, you know, I told her, for, you know, unwanted solicitation from a friend, I said, I know it's hard, but she's been holding all this stuff in for weeks now. I said, my best advice is just let it out. Go in a room, cry, scream, punch the pillow, throw things at the wall, whatever you need to get it out. And she said, thank you. You are very kind. I am now hiding in myself and starting to feel very strong emotions, crying and sad. Next to Dennis, her husband, I didn't show tears. I tried to keep to myself. Everything hurts so much now. I'm sure that soon I will start returning to normal. And that's when I gave her that little pep talk. And she said, I started letting myself go. So we decided she'll come on later in the week. She needs to, she needs to de-stress. She needs to unplug and let those emotions out. I can't even imagine. You know, all we can do is imagine what people are going through. We've not been in this kind of a situation. We've not been in a war zone where our friends and loved ones and homes are being destroyed. So whenever she's ready, she'll join us. In the meantime, we keep communicating via the Telegram app, and I'll stay in touch with her. And so just know that she's out of danger, but her husband is not. So that's going on. Now I need to address what happened Friday. Friday, my intentions were good. Really, I wanted to invite on somebody who's ostensibly on the same side I am. We all want peace. And you know what? I think a listener pointed out that we were talking around each other because I was talking about immediate peace. I want the fight. I want the bombing to stop. I want the killing of innocent people in Ukraine to end. And what our guest, you know, this guy, David Swanson, is an anti-war activist, as I've always been. I guess the problem came that I brought up this article that he should be embarrassed by. When you talk about, as bombs are raining down on people who did nothing to provoke this, David Swanson's article suggests that the Ukrainians should be embracing nonviolent, peaceful protests. Well, of course, but maybe, just maybe, do that when there aren't bombs raining down on them. That's what we should be doing every day, is speaking out, protesting against war, against authoritarian forms of government, against what Vladimir Putin is doing, right? When bombs are raining down on you, that's not the time that you're supposed to be saluting the peace activists in Russia. I mean, yeah, but you're dodging bullets. You're dodging mortar. You're dodging incoming bombs. And so I was frustrated. He, is of a certain mind, and good for him. Where my problem is, so after the show ended, he takes the video that I had tweeted out, and he tweets out, so-called, quote, in quotes, progressive advocates for murdering people. I'm advocating for murdering people because I suggested that we'd all be better off if someone, you know, took out Putin. So when he said, oh, so you're advocating the murder of a foreign dictator, I said, I would have advocated for the murder of ours if Trump had done the same thing Putin's doing. So now I'm advocating murdering people. Well, I just thought you would like to hear this little piece from yeah, Friday's show was surreal, huh? But this was my response. Actually, somebody on Twitter found it and I just retweeted it. I hope I don't get copyright violated for it. You know what? I'm not going to play the audio. I'm not going to play the video. I'll just play the audio because I tend to get away with playing Colbert audio. But if I play the video, the YouTube monitors get me. So this is Stephen Colbert speaking just a few nights ago. Well, he'll explain to you the day and why he said what he's saying.
It is today. Check your calendars. It's March 15th, otherwise known as the Ides of March.
Hmm.
And I invite the Russian oligarchs in Putin's inner circle to celebrate the day in whatever way seems most appropriate. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Just take a stab at it.
Take a stab at it? Oh, man. Is he suggesting, you know, what happened to Caesar on the Ides of March? Oh my God. He's advocating killing, assassinating a foreign leader, David Swanson. Aren't you going to tweet out that Stephen Colbert is advocating murdering people? Because that's the kind of guy he is. See, that's that disinformation. That's that, you know, that's that quoting people out of context. And, you know, so I blocked him. So believe me, you will not be hearing from, what's his name, on this show again. So you got that. What's going on in Ukraine is just too hard to think about all the time. Now that Tanya's out of there, frankly, I'm not watching. I tuned out of the news this weekend just because for my own mental health, right? But I've seen enough. I know what's going on. And Putin is doubling down on the worst of it. Yeah, they're firebombing that city, Mariupol, or I know I'm getting it wrong. If I have it in front of me, I can tell you, is just, you know, they're bombing the ashes. And then I read that they are, they have deported a lot of Ukrainian citizens from that city, the city that they've basically leveled, right? The city of Mariupol, right? That's what it's called. They've deported hundreds, if not thousands, of Ukrainians from there and sent them to Russia. The stuff that's going on is in no way adheres to the Geneva Conventions, but Vladimir Putin still insists this isn't a war. You know, this is opposite world. It's the lying. It's the lying that we came to expect from Trump, from the former guy. And it's fascinating, frighteningly fascinating to hear Putin using Trump's playbook, who was probably using Putin's playbook. But, you know, I'm sorry. I'm going to stop down for a couple of minutes and read to you Leonard Pitts's column today. Leonard Pitts is a syndicated columnist. The Miami Herald is his home paper, but he's syndicated nationally. So maybe he's in your paper and you may get this column tomorrow. But the column, the newspaper writes the headline. And the headline on this one is, to tell you the truth, so many leaders lie to them because we want them to. And here's what he wrote. When Russian bombs began to fall on Ukraine, Julia Tymoshenko called her aunt in Moscow. She told her about spending a night in the basement as explosions thundered overhead. Her aunt was unimpressed. Well, you don't know who did that, she said. We're seeing one thing on the news. You're seeing another thing on the news. Tymoshenko, who's 22, sent her aunt photos. The bomb shelter, the refugee train packed with fleeing people. It's not the news for me, she told her aunt. It's my reality, and it's what I see with my own eyes. In response, her aunt blocked her. That story, told last week on CBS Sunday Morning, suggests that for as much as this is a war against buildings, bodies, and a legitimately elected government, it is also a war against objective truth. Richard Pryor, channeling Chico Marx, once put it like this: who are you going to believe, me? Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? Well, this is a war against your lying eyes. Evidence abounds. It includes Russia's attack on TV towers in Ukraine. We saw a picture of that sent to us by Tanya. It's crackdown on social media and other independent information sources. It's detention and intimidation of journalists. And it's new law mandating up to a 15-year prison sentence for reporting so-called fake news. That is, news that contradicts the Kremlin. Same way that Donald Trump dubbed fake news anything that contradicted his line of bullshit. Not the fake news that Jon Stewart used to do on The Daily Show, or the fake news you get from the Fox Not News channel every day. Anything that disagrees with the official party line, in this case, Putin, is deemed fake news. Let's see. Some Russian TV journalists have quit rather than parrot Moscow's lies about the, quote, special military operation they are forbidden to call a war. More ominously, at this writing, four reporters have been killed by Russian forces. War being what it is, it's impossible to say definitively whether Brent Renault, Pierre Zakrzewski, Alexandra Sasha I want to get her name right because this is a human being who was killed. Kuvishnivova, close enough, and Yevheny Sakhin were specifically targeted. But Russia being what it is, it sure seems likely. Yet, every nation at war seems to control the flow of information to shape the narrative to its advantage. That's why television and radio stations are prized targets for invading armies. But this feels like an Orwellian step beyond that, an extension of something with which we've become sadly familiar in this era of preposterous social media conspiracies and multiple choice truth, meaning an attempt not just to lie, but to overwrite reality. America, unfortunately, has extensive recent experience with that, so it's hard to watch this with any sense of detachment, to observe as though through some intervening window, as the very idea of knowable things is mauled. No, this is frightening stuff. Julia Tymoshenko's aunt is what you'd expect her to be under a regime that weaponizes lies and interdicts truth. And Lord knows, truth is trouble enough even without that. You can't handle the truth, Jack Nicholson famously snarls in A Few Good Men. But the thing left unsaid is that many of us don't want it anyway. All protests to the contrary notwithstanding, because it challenges what they choose or need to believe. In other words, truth is hard, but QAnon is easy. And defending truth grows harder still, not only in Ukraine, but also in Lafayette Square, where journalists were gassed. In Ferguson, where they were arrested. In Minneapolis, where police shot one in the eye. This is as some of us wait for JFK to return from the dead and Donald Trump to be restored to the White House. All of which makes it difficult to have any sense of remove from Moscow's war on reality. You'd like that war to be just some scary thing far away, glimpsed safely through a window. But it's actually a mirror reflection of us. Distorted, yes, but not nearly as much as you'd like to believe. That is Leonard Pitts's column. And it's you know, it's what I've been screaming about for years. It's opposite world. It's the liars at Fox who, you know, they know the difference between news and not news, between news between news and bullshit.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
So, but lie they do, and lying apparently is what right-wingers, I'm sure, look, there are some liberals who lie, I'm not going to say we are blameless, but I you know, I'm sorry. There's no comparison between the shit flying from people on the other side. And we can start with, all right, we'll move on. By the way, the phone lines are open today. Should you care to weigh in on this? Oh, I should put the numbers up. They're not up on my thing here, are they? Let me see if I have them handy. Anyway, you know, whether we're talking about Putin's lying, Trump's, is it here? Let's see. Yeah. Okay. There's the phone information. It'll be up on the screen for you. Trump's habit. I honestly don't think he knows the difference between truth and lies anymore. That's what happens when you are such a prolific liar. It just comes so naturally that you believe your own bullshit after a while. Much like, I guess we could segue now into today's opening of the confirmation hearings for Ketanji Brown Jackson, who's nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court. My God, is this woman impressive. Wow. I was impressed with her before, but hearing her today, just incredible. So I'm gonna, then why did Zelensky ask about in Trump's perfect phone call? What? Oh, okay. She's responding to someone. I guess there's somebody in the chat room who must be a troll, who must be let's see. The Javelin missiles Trump approved of were delivered to Ukraine in 2018. Stop trying to blame Trump for Putin's insanity. Yeah, the Javelin missiles finally got there after the world heard Donald Trump try to extort him for them. When Zelensky said, wait, I really need those Javelin missiles. By the way, the Javelins are anti-tank missiles. They destroy tanks. Something that they could have used a whole lot of over the last 3 weeks. Donald Trump said, when Vladimir Putin asked him for those javelins again, said, well, I need you to do me a favor first. Or maybe he said us a favor first. Either way, doesn't matter. He never spoke on behalf of me, but he purported to. He tried to extort him. What he wanted Zelensky to do was say openly to the press, well, we've launched an investigation into your presidential candidate, Joe Biden, and his son, Hunter Biden. First of all, Hunter Biden has nothing to do with Joe Biden's presidency, nor did he have anything to do with his campaign. Unlike the Trump family, Biden doesn't put his family into his work as a politician, as a senator, a vice president, or a president. This is complete and utter
bullshit.
And yet the right wingers keep bringing it up. And by the way, chat room moderators, if you want to, you know, James Ocean is a perfect person of who you can boot from the chat room. You booted one of our friends last week. Yes. Hold on. It should be on the coffee table in the living room. Yeah, it should have. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there. But, you know, if you want to talk about who's lying, who deserves to be booted from the chat room, make it the person who's spouting pro-Putin
bullshit.
Okay? So that's going on, right? Don't ever forget, Donald Trump then was outed to as an extortionist for trying to get a foreign leader to interfere again in a U.S. election by making shit up, because that's what they do. So again, if you don't want to boot James Ocean from the chat room, I will. And I just did. Unless, moderators, you want to tell me that, you know, I didn't see all of his posts. But I'm sick of that shit. I'm sick of the mendacity. I'm sick of the lies. Like, okay, like today, it was the opening day of the confirmation hearings for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson to sit on the Supreme Court. And, you know, oh my God, almost every time a Republican spoke, I listened because it's my job. And I was infuriated. We can start with Lindsey Graham, the biggest fucking liar of them all. Let's see what Lindsey said. Hold on one second. And obviously, I'm not going to play you the whole thing because each of them had 10 minutes to speak. So I'm not going to go for the 10 minutes. What Lindsey Graham did with his 10 minutes is cry because the judge from South Carolina didn't get the nomination. Well, there were a lot of very qualified women for this position. And it's not up to Joe Biden to pick who he wants. Apparently to Lindsey Graham, no. We had to go for the most conservative of the names that were floated, who happened to be this Judge Childs. What? Not there? Okay. Well, let me play. I'm going to play something and I'll come out and find it for you. Hold on one second. Let me play. Here's Lindsey Graham, but this is only 30 seconds. It's not going to be long enough. Hold on one second. All right. So here's Lindsey Graham. Just to give you an idea of the kind of crap he was spewing. Oh, come on, Lindsey.
To the very last minute when the hearing's about to be gavel concluded and say, oh, by the way, I've got this letter. And so happened that every media outlet in the country had the letter, too. So the next morning, there were headlines all over the country, really, accusing Judge Kavanaugh of being basically Bill Cosby.
Because he was.
None of us are going to do that to you. And if any of us does that to you, all hell will break out.
Oh, my God. They couldn't do that to her because she's not that. Brett Kavanaugh has a history of, you know, sexual abuse. Let's call it what it is. And Lindsey Graham just impugned Ketanji Brown Jackson's integrity with that statement. Oh my God. I'm amazed. I'm not shocked, but I'm amazed. I do want to play for you her opening statement because it was quite brilliant, and that'll let me find what I need to find. So let me see. I think I've got it up. I do. I have it up right here. In case you didn't see it, it runs about 12 minutes. And we're going to run the whole thing because I want you to hear this woman. I want you to hear her and see her if you're watching on video to know that. So you'll see over the course of the next 3 days how the Republicans attempt to smear her and mischaracterize her, all the while saying, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do what you horrible people did to Brett Kavanaugh. I'm sorry. Brett Kavanaugh did it to himself. He's the one who said, I like beer. Brett Kavanaugh provoked this by his actions. You know what? And I'm sure she'd say it. Anything you think you have on Ketanji Brown Jackson, bring it. Because you're grasping at straws. She is the most qualified person, as opposed to the three things that were put on the Supreme Court by the former guy. She's got the most experience. She's actually got trial experience. Go figure, which Amy Comey Barrett doesn't have. They put up the most unqualified people who they nominate them for lifetime appointments. I'm not sure if any of these got an unqualified from the Bar Association, but many of the judges they nominated because they're out of power now for lifetime positions were rated unqualified by the bar, by every legal group out there. Not so with Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, and now you're going to hear why. All right, have a listen to this.
Chairman Durbin, Ranking Member Grassley, and distinguished members of the Judiciary Committee, thank you for convening this hearing and for considering my nomination as Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. I am humbled and honored to be here. And I am also truly grateful for the generous introductions that my former judicial colleague, Judge Tom Griffith, and my close friend, Professor Lisa Fairfax, have so graciously provided. I'm also very thankful for the confidence that President Biden has placed in me and for the kindness that he and the First Lady and the Vice President and the Second Gentleman have extended to me and my family. Today will be the fourth time that I've had the honor of appearing before this committee to be considered for confirmation. Over the past 3 weeks, I have also had the honor of meeting each member of this committee separately, and I've met with 45 senators in total. Your careful attention to my nomination demonstrates your dedication to the crucial role that the Senate plays in this constitutional process, and I thank you. And while I'm on the subject of gratitude, I must also pause to reaffirm my thanks to God, for it is faith that sustains me at this moment. Even prior to today, I can honestly say that my life has been blessed beyond measure. The first of my many blessings is the fact that I was born in this great nation a little over 50 years ago in September of 1970. Congress had enacted two civil rights acts in the decade before, and like so many who had experienced lawful racial segregation firsthand, my parents, Johnny and Ellery Brown, left their hometown of Miami, Florida, and moved to Washington, D.C. to experience new freedom. When I was born here in Washington, my parents were public school teachers, and to express both pride in their heritage and hope for the future, they gave me an African name, Ketanji Onyeka, which they were told means lovely one. My parents taught me that unlike the many barriers that they had had to face growing up, my path was clearer, so that if I worked hard and I believed in myself in America, I could do anything or be anything I wanted to be. Like so many families in this country, they worked long hours and sacrificed to provide their children every opportunity to reach their God-given potential. My parents have been married for almost 54 years, and they're here with me today. I cannot possibly thank them enough for everything they've done for me. I love you, Mom and Dad. My father, in particular, bears responsibility for my interest in the law. When I was four, we moved back to Miami so that he could be a full-time law student, and we lived on the campus of the University of Miami Law School. During those years, my mother pulled double duty, working as the sole breadwinner of our family while also guiding and inspiring four-year-old me. My very earliest memories are of watching my father study. He had his stack of law books on the kitchen table while I sat across from him with my stack of coloring books.
Aww.
My parents also instilled in me and my younger brother, Ketaj, the importance of public service. After graduating from Howard University, Ketaj started out as a police officer, following two of our uncles. After the September 11th attacks on our country, Ketaj volunteered for the Army and eventually became an infantry officer serving two tours of duty in the Middle East. Ketaj is here today providing his love and support, as always. And speaking of unconditional love, I would like to introduce you to my husband of 25 years, Dr. Patrick Jackson. I have no doubt that without him by my side from the very beginning of this incredible professional journey, none of this would have been possible. We met in college more than three decades ago, and since then, he's been the best husband, father, and friend I could ever imagine. Patrick, I love you.
Aww. And he's wiping tears.
William,
and his
Patrick's
daughter next to him is adorable.
Identical twin brother is here as well, along with his wonderful wife, Dana. Also here from Park City, Utah, are Patrick's older brother, Gardy, and his wife, Natalie. And last, but certainly not least, my very dear in-laws, the matriarch and patriarch of the Jackson family, Pamela and Gardner Jackson, have traveled here from Boston to be with me today.
What a beautiful family, huh?
I'm saving a special moment in this introduction for my daughters, Talia and Layla. Girls, I know it has not been easy as I've tried to navigate the challenges of juggling my career and motherhood. And I fully admit that I did not always get the balance right. But I hope that you've seen that with hard work, determination, and love, it can be done. I am so looking forward to seeing what each of you chooses to do with your amazing lives in this incredible country. I love you so much.
Oh.
There are so many others who are not here today, but whom I need to acknowledge. I have a large extended family on both sides. They are watching from Florida, North Carolina, New Jersey, Connecticut, New York, Massachusetts, Colorado, and beyond. I also have incredible friends. Three of my college roommates came here today to support me. And I have so many other boosters from Miami Palmetto Senior High School, Harvard undergrad, Harvard Law School, and all throughout my personal and professional life. I've also had extraordinary mentors, like my high school debate coach, Fran Berger. May she rest in peace. She invested fully in me, including taking me to Harvard, the first I'd ever really thought of it, to enter a speech competition. Mrs. Berger believed in me, and in turn, I believed in myself. In the category of great mentors, it was also my great good fortune to have had the chance to clerk for three brilliant jurists, U.S. District Judge Patty Saris, U.S. Court of Appeals Judge Bruce Celia, and Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer. These extraordinary people were exceptional role models. Justice Breyer, in particular, not only gave me the greatest job that any young lawyer could ever hope to have, but he also exemplifies what it means to be a Supreme Court justice of the highest level of skill and integrity, civility, and grace. It is extremely humbling to be considered for Justice Breyer's seat, and I know that I could never fill his shoes. But if confirmed, I would hope to carry on his spirit. On the day of his Supreme Court nomination, Justice Breyer said, quote, "What is law supposed to do, seen as a whole? It is supposed to allow all people, to live together in a society where they have so many different views, so many different needs, to live together in a way that is more harmonious, that is better, so that they can work productively together." End quote. I could not have said it better myself. Members of this committee, if I am confirmed, I commit to you that I will work productively to support and defend the Constitution and this grand experiment of American democracy that has endured over these past 246 years. I have been a judge for nearly a decade now, and I take that responsibility and my duty to be independent very seriously. I decide cases from a neutral posture. I evaluate the facts, and I interpret and apply the law to the facts of the case before me without fear or favor, consistent with my judicial oath. I know that my role as a judge is a limited one, that the Constitution empowers me only to decide cases and controversies that are properly presented. And I know that my judicial role is further constrained by careful adherence to precedent. Now, in preparing for these hearings, you may have read some of my more than 570 written decisions, and you may have also noticed that my opinions tend to be on the long side. That is because I also believe in transparency, that people should know precisely what I think and the basis for my decision. And all of my professional experiences, including my work as a public defender and as a trial judge, have instilled in me the importance of having each litigant know that the judge in their case has heard them, whether or not their arguments prevail in court. During this hearing, I hope that you will see how much I love our country and the Constitution and the rights that make us free. I stand on the shoulders of so many who have come before me, including Judge Constance Baker Motley, who was the first African-American woman to be appointed to the federal bench and with whom I share a birthday. And like Judge Motley, I have dedicated my career to ensuring that the words engraved on the front of the Supreme Court building, "Equal Justice Under Law," are a reality and not just an ideal.
Ooh, yeah.
Thank you for this historic chance to join the highest court, to work with brilliant colleagues, to inspire future generations, and to ensure liberty and justice for all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That was just, you know, incredible. And if I, you know, could say, that's the kind of Supreme Court justice we need and, yes, deserve, especially after living through what we have for the last few years and the people that were put on the court during that time. I want to share with you another clip. By the way, the phone lines are open, 954-889-6410. If you're on Skype, you can Skype into me, at Nicole Sandler, all one word. I'm curious your thoughts on Judge Brown Jackson and, you know, anything else you want to talk about. But so I've got some clips from today's hearings. Cory Booker was a bit, well, I'm not even going to say that. He told a story about, well, to share with you about Judge Jackson and her daughters, one of her daughters anyway.
Behind you and your family is your daughter, Layla. And when she was 11 years old, I love this, she wrote a letter to President Obama urging him to nominate her mother, you, to the United States Supreme Court. Wow. And in that letter, her recommendation put forward that you, Judge Jackson, would be, quote, a great Supreme Court justice. I suspect after these proceedings, and please God, after your confirmation to the Supreme Court, something new will happen in America. That letter from your daughter will not be exceptional. Generations of little young girls and generations of little young boys, no matter who their parents are, will have the audacity to write the President of the United States, whether they're daughters of white parents or black parents or biracial parents or Muslim and Jewish parents, Sikh or Hindu parents, we're going to see a new generation of children talking about their mamas and daring to write to the President of the United States of America that my mom should be on the Supreme Court. Well, I want to tell your daughter right now that that dream of hers is so close to being a reality. Some tough days ahead, but I think it can happen.
How awesome is that? That, you know, this girl, and by the way, one of the daughters is masked, so we can't really see her. The other daughter who isn't masked is just a beautiful young woman. I don't know which one wrote the letter, but good on her, and what a story to tell your grandchildren, right? All right, to the phones. First call up is David, my husband. Hi, David, what's up?
Well, Cory Booker made me want to heave, but
yeah,
that's another story.
Yep.
The most amusing part of the hearing that I heard so far is how does a cretin like Marsha Blackburn,
oh, God,
who graduated from a fucking cow college with a degree in home economics, get off questioning the credentials of someone like Judge Jackson, who graduated cum laude, both undergraduate and law school graduate of Harvard.
Yeah. You know what? I've got David. I'm going to run because I got other people wanting to call in. But I'm going to hang up on you. Bye. And I'm going to play before we get to the next caller. Hold on. I'm going to play a couple of clips from Marsha Blackburn because she went out there. She went after the LGBTQ community. She went after CRT. This woman is a fucking nut. Keep me up while we listen to her. All right. So here's Marsha Blackburn, because I'm sure I've got a few choice words to say while she's speaking.
You have praised the 1619 Project, which argues the U.S. is a fundamentally racist country.
Yeah.
And you have made clear that you believe judges must consider critical race theory when deciding how to sentence criminal defendants. Is it your personal hidden agenda to incorporate critical race theory into our legal system?
Look
at
her face.
These are answers that the American people need to know.
Yeah.
So we are going.
Oh, okay. So that was one clip. Now listen to this one about indoctrination. Hold on. I think it's going to play. Come on. You can do it.
Learning. You serve on the board of a school that teaches kindergartners, 5-year-old children, that they can choose their gender and teaches them about so-called white privilege.
Oh my God.
This school has hosted an organization called Woke Kindergarten and pushes an anti-racist education program for white families. Your public endorsement of this type progressive indoctrination of our children causes one great concern
comes
to how you may rule on cases involving parental rights.
Oh, please.
Parents also know
Okay, shut the fuck up.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch.
Shit, really?
I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch.
Everybody's saying, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, bam, bam. Shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, bam, bam. Shut the fuck up. All right, let's go back to the phones. Joy, hi.
Hi there. I haven't talked to you for a while.
No?
She's from Tennessee.
From Tennessee. And you know what? This was just their opening remarks. This is when even Josh Hawley attempted to be somewhat civil to her. Marsha Blackburn just went in with both guns blazing. I'm like, what? Excuse me. I want someone to ask her, please explain what critical race theory is. Because she has no clue.
A She's a racist.
She has no clue. Yep. Okay. Go on.
But what I wanted to say, though, was that I think that this nominee is one of the better ones I've seen ever.
Oh, she's amazing. Yeah, I agree.
My dad was a judge in the military, and he would have made a fine Supreme Court judge, but he was in the military, and they never considered him.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's passed on, but this is the person I want.
Oh, she's
deciding.
Right. I do, too. I mean, she's the first one I've been excited about in a long time. Even, look.
Me, too.
You know, I've been pleasantly, not surprised. I thought Sotomayor would be good, but I didn't know so much. Kagan is just kind of there. You know, she's the first one I've been excited about in a long time. And the bullshit, you know, that Lindsey Graham was spewing, they went as far left as they could go. You know, stop it already.
My dad used to work with Lindsey Graham.
Oh, God.
I know. It's really fairly strange. I met him a few times, and he wasn't so bad then.
Oh,
but
come on.
That was when we were in Germany.
Right. Okay. All right. Joy, I'm going to run along because I want to get a few more calls in. I want to get a few more clips, and thank you for calling. All right. So check this out. So this was, I know, Ted, you know, Raphael, I had to turn him off, but I'm just going to play two very quick clips from Ted Cruz because this man is out of his mind. Just out of his mind. Okay.
Carjacking rates, crime rates skyrocketing across the country.
Yeah.
In significant part because political Soros-backed district attorneys, because of Democratic efforts to abolish the police.
Okay. That was the first Soros mentioned. Soros-backed district attorneys. Okay. What else are you smoking, Ted? Oh, this one, he talks about how the attacks on...
No one is going to inquire into your teenage dating habits.
Teenage dating habits. That's what he thinks was going on with the inquiry into Brett Kavanaugh. Teenage dating habits. No, Ted, Raphael, it wasn't teenage dating habits. It was rape. It was sexual assault. That's what it was. The backwardsness of their shit is just infuriating. Just infuriating. All right, I'm just going to play one more clip. I'm not going to even play you the Josh Hawley because he's so insincere. Soros-backed district attorneys. How many dog whistles can you put into one day-long hearing? All right. First of all, I'm not going to play the video. Just play the audio. You don't need to see them. Chuck Grassley is the ranking Republican on the committee. So he's second to Dick Durbin, who's the chair. Chuck Grassley is 88 years old. He is actually, his term ends this year, and he's running for re-election. I want to ask all those people, Trump followers, who insist that Joe Biden is suffering from dementia. He isn't. Tell me what Chuck Grassley is suffering from, please. Or just translate what he's saying here, if it starts playing anytime today. Come on, Chuck. I guess I could do it from this computer because...
On a final note.
Yeah.
During Justice Barrett's confirmation hearing.
Yeah.
Democrats said that she would, quote unquote, judicial torpedo aiming at protections for pre-existing conditions.
What?
We heard that argument repeatedly. Conservatives and anyone who actually looked at her record and laws said that was strictly nonsense.
I'm sorry. I can't even follow what he says. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. And then there's Miss Lindsay. Oh, Lindsay. All right. You know what? I am going to. Here's Lindsey Graham.
To the very last minute when the hearing's about to be gavel concluded and say, oh, by the way, I've got this letter. And so happened that every media outlet in the country had the letter, too. So the next morning, there were headlines all over the country, really, accusing Judge Kavanaugh of being basically Bill Cosby.
Okay, well, because Judge Kavanaugh had those problems. Judge Brown Jackson does not. All right, okay, San Diego, you're on. Who's this?
It's Vivian Marlborough again.
Okay, hold on a second. Don't jump in. Let me explain to listeners who you are, who probably don't know. This is a young man who lives in San Diego. His mother is a listener of the show, and she's reasonable in terms of her politics. But this is her son, who I think is around, 18 or 19, who's a Republican. Okay, so now, go ahead. You're what?
I'm basically like Harlan Ellison. I'm sort of like Harlan Ellison if Harlan Ellison was a Republican and not secular. But anyway, I wanted to talk about the whole thing that's going on with Ukraine right now.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know much about the whole Ketanji Jackson thing. I don't know much about her. But let me just talk about Ukraine. I think that, okay, remember like 2 years ago when there were reports coming out of Russia, when there were rumors coming out of Russia that Putin had Parkinson's and had cancer?
No, I don't. Because I don't pay attention to to rumors. No, I don't. Because I don't listen to fake news. I don't watch Fox. I check my sources. And if it's bullshit, I don't go there.
No, I'm saying that there were rumors of this.
I don't believe rumors. I listened. Hold on. I don't give any credence to rumors. I trust trusted news sources. So rumors, no, I don't pay attention to them. If it's in three verifiable, reputable news sources, then I'll listen. So don't bring up rumors from 2 years ago to me because it's just that. What else you got?
He wants to take the rest of the world with him. This is his plan. He's going to kill as many people as possible because he's dying.
Okay, Mr. Brilliance. Okay, great. So that's your strategy. So what do we do?
What does America do?
Yeah.
I think what we need to do is we need to do what we did with the Mujahideen, which is we need to support Ukraine, but at the same time not be racist against Russians. We need to...
All right. Bye, buddy. Be racist against Russians. Give me a fucking break. We're not being racist against Russians. And this is my problem with people who, you know just a little bit and think they know everything. That young man is, what, maybe 19 years old, and he listens to right-wing talk radio and probably watches Fox, and he thinks he admits he doesn't know anything about Ketanji Brown Jackson. Hey, young man, whose name I can't remember, maybe you should learn something about her rather than worrying about rumors from Putin from 2 years ago. Learn some truths. Stop making shit up in your head, because that puts you in league with the rest of the party that you belong to. Oh, my God. See, when I saw 619, I knew it was him. This kid, you know, he likes to call in to fight with me, but he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. If you are a Republican and you want to debate me, you must first... stipulate to the facts. Sky is blue, grass is green, and Republicans lie about every fucking thing on earth. Oh my God. All right. You know what? I can't leave on this note. I'm going to leave with another song from our friend, Lauren Mayer. If I can get the, you know what? Rather than that, you know what? Because he brought up Putin and the whole thing, I'm going to do this. Last week or the week before, I played for you video of this little girl who was singing in one of the underground shelters. It appears to be she's either in a basement somewhere or she's in she's in a bomb shelter in Ukraine. And her video, the video of her singing this, went viral. Remember this?
Теперь она решила исполнить вам песню для поднятия боевого духа. Амелия Анисович.
Okay, hold on. She's going to sing in a moment.
Сейчас все не будут шуметь. Можно немножечко тишины?
Okay, come on. Sing. Here we go. Будь хорошей девочкой для всех. Закрой все чувства на замок. Навечно отпусти и забудь, что прошло уже не вернуть. Отпусти и забудь, новый день он кажет путь. Не боюсь ничего уже. Пусть бы шум ничто, холод всегда мне был по душе, а я иду все выше на ледяную власть. You notice how everyone got quiet.
Меня уж не догнать, пора узнать, что я могу на помощь призову к себе во льдах. Навечно отпусти и забудь, что прошло уже не вернуть.
This is a little girl singing the song from Frozen, Let It Go, in a bomb shelter in Russia, where moments ago you heard everybody, babies crying and people making noise, and it got very quiet, right? Well, apparently that little girl and her family escaped to Poland. And I guess last night or over the weekend, she sang the Ukrainian national anthem at a stadium in Poland. If you're watching on video, stop what you're doing and watch this. If you're listening, just know there are thousands of lights lit up in the stadium.
Згинуть наші вороженьки, як роса на сонці запанує, і ми, браття, у своїй
Wow. Wow. She sang that in front of a full stadium with a lot of lights, you know, a lot of lighters held up throughout it. The little girl from the subway. How incredible was that? And that's how we end the show today. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow, Laffy will be here because it's every other Tuesday. And I believe we're going to be joined by Lisa Graves, a dear friend who is a great legal mind as well. Lisa Graves was a deputy attorney general in the Justice Department during the Clinton administration. So she'll weigh in on today's and tomorrow's proceedings as well. We'll have her join us at the end of the show with Laffy. Yeah. And then, you know, we'll keep going. The hearings go on throughout the week, I think through Thursday. And for whatever reason, CNN cut away from it today. So maybe you don't watch on CNN. But we'll cover it. I'll bring you highlights here, okay, along with what else we have going on. And with that, we're done. Thank you for listening, everyone. As always, I appreciate it more than you know. And yes, somebody asked about the new sunflowers in the window in the back. That's a project I did this weekend. The other sunflowers sold. I have to do one for Tatiana as soon as she can go home. But I figure, look, I'm sharing the sunflower love because that's what one thing we can do. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye. All right, and I'll leave you with the news. Until tomorrow. Whoops, wrong intro. Oh, well.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
A new week begins on a hopeful note. A Senate confirmation hearings begin for Ketanji Brown Jackson, who once confirmed will be the first black woman on the U.S. Supreme Court. The 51-year-old judge will be formally introduced during televised hearings Monday morning, followed by 2 days of questioning and 1 day of testimony from additional witnesses. President Biden chose Jackson to succeed retiring Justice Stephen Breyer. She's a former federal public defender who has sat on lower U.S. courts for nearly a decade. She's a graduate of Harvard Law School and also served early in her career as a law clerk to Justice Breyer. The goal is to reach a final Senate vote by early April. On a very slightly related note, Justice Clarence Thomas was admitted to the hospital over the weekend, reportedly exhibiting flu-like symptoms. They tell us his condition is not COVID-related and he is improving, but also said he'll likely miss some oral arguments this week. Well, President Biden heads to Europe on Wednesday to meet with NATO, the European Council, and the G7 as the Russian bombardment of Ukraine continues. In addition to Belgium, Biden will visit Poland to meet with their president to discuss the humanitarian and human rights crisis that Russia's unjustified war on Ukraine has created. But first, a call with the French, German, Italian, and British leaders Monday morning. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is appealing for ceasefire talks with the Russian dictator Putin, but the U.S. and NATO officials say Putin is sticking to his original demands. Last week, Putin laid out several conditions for a ceasefire, including a demand for Ukraine's neutrality or an assurance that Ukraine would never become a NATO member. Zelensky indicated that he's willing to consider a neutrality policy under certain conditions to help bring an end to the violence. But Ukrainian and Russian negotiators have now met 4 times since the start of Russia's invasion, with no major resolution on Putin's other demands. Russia had set a deadline for authorities in Mariupol to surrender the city, but that deadline has passed, and Ukrainians rejected that ultimatum. Russia is now likely to prioritize attempting to encircle Kyiv over the coming weeks, this according to the UK Defense Ministry. And we've learned that 4 journalists have so far been killed while reporting on the war, and many more are injured or missing. The world's eyes are on the Ukrainian eastern port city of Mariupol, where on Sunday, Russia did it again. Their jets bombed an art school where about 400 Ukrainians were sheltering. The mayor of the city said no information was immediately available on casualties or how many people were trapped in the rubble of art school number 12. The bombing accompanied another raid on the city, where Russian forces pushed into all of the city's civilian neighborhoods, resulting in house-to-house warfare. as Ukraine refused Russia's call to surrender the city. Mariupol has been described by survivors as hell on earth. And while Zelensky keeps pushing for in-person talks with Putin, Putin doesn't seem to be budging. And then Ukraine on Monday rejected the latest Russian call to lay down their arms and surrender the city of Mariupol. That port city has faced heavy bombardment by Russian forces for the past 3 weeks since the invasion began. Authorities saying that roughly 2,500 people have already been killed there, though the true number may be much higher. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky keeps trying. On Sunday, he praised Israel for attempting to broker some kind of peace with Russia, but called for the government of Prime Minister Naftali Bennett to do more to help Ukraine defend itself against invading Russian forces. Zelensky saying, quote, "It is possible to mediate between countries, but not between good and evil." Zelensky, who is Jewish, appealed to Jewish Israelis by invoking times when they were persecuted. He asked why Israel had not provided Ukraine with weapons like its Iron Dome anti-rock missile defense system. Some Israeli lawmakers, of course, objected to Zelensky's comparison of the plight of Ukrainians to that of the Jews during the Holocaust. And finally, news on the COVID vaccination front. A new study found that the Johnson & Johnson coronavirus vaccine remains durable and effective even through the surge of cases caused by the Delta variant. The research found that the Johnson & Johnson shot was 76% effective in preventing COVID-19 infections and 81% effective in preventing COVID-related hospitalizations. The study also showed that, unlike the mRNA vaccines, the Johnson & Johnson one provided lasting immunity at least 6 months after the shots. CNN added to it, saying that their analysis of information collected by the CDC showed that the J&J vaccine also had the lowest breakthrough infection rate of all the vaccines since the week ending December 25th of last year. On the other hand, breakthrough infections during the Omicron surge were the highest among those who received the Pfizer vaccine, followed by those who got the Moderna vaccine. Just shows the more you know. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.
Democratic strategist, a columnist for The Hill in Washington, D.C.